This is the Data Privacy Detective. It's December 2020, and today we're going to focus on this topic. How can a community gather, process, and use personal information to make a sense of the massive data that it accumulates, and then use it for good purposes? And with us today as a guest is Lee Norris. Lee, thank you very much for joining us from beautiful North Carolina.
Happy to be here.
Now, Lee, you've got more than 25 years of higher education IT experience, and you've had a number of leadership roles in infrastructure, security, compliance, ERP systems delivery, data platform architecture. Currently, you lead the University of North Carolina Greensboro's Enterprise Data Architecture team. So what do you do in that role?
Well, what I do in that role is I lead a team of architects and visualization experts in bringing together data from a number of different data sources, a large number of data sources approaching 100 or more that are used for various different purposes within the university. Our charge is to design architecture that can provide those data in ways that our university community can make use of them in their decision-making processes. And underpinning that is a desire to make sure that we protect the integrity of those data and the privacy of those data for our customers, our constituents.
Right. You want that data to end up being accurate to build a decent database, but you also want to be able to assure people that you're not invading their personal space too much. Is that the balance you have to achieve?
That's absolutely the balance that we have to achieve. We have a number, well, for instance, we have about 20,000 students, and we have in our transactional systems a lot of information from those students that's really critical for their educational progress, but also for use in things like their financial aid needs. And the result of anything that we bring together for them needs to protect those data in ways that will ensure their privacy.
Yeah, the law requires that, of course, as do students, and so you have to deal with that. But how big is the data community of UNCG? 20,000 students currently, and then I'm sure you have faculty and alumni and so on. So how many different inputs would you have from people, or what privacy lawyers call data subjects?
Well, in terms of data subjects, we can think of our data subjects in sort of multiple categories. You know, we have that the core group, our students, our researchers, our faculty, and our staff. Yep. And so they're about,
how many
as
faculty,
I said,
just to give us some sense.
There are 3,500 faculty and staff.
That gets you close to 25,000 just there.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. And then, of course, we have a large, we're a significant size, we're a research institution that's of significant size. Mm-hmm. And so we have a large number of alumni as well. Those would be another group of folks who would have data in our systems or would have use of the data from our systems. And if we add those and then we bring in the community, we could easily surpass 50 or approach 100,000 data constituents.
Over time, that's only going to build unless you have a way of getting rid of data about people from 50 years ago or something. So that's so typical. It could be a city, it could be a village, it could be another university system. You're right in the area of, I'll just call it, the mid-sized communities that deal with data. So let me ask you this question, Lee. How does data privacy and the rules and the laws around it, how does that affect your job?
Well, actually, it's kind of core to my job because not just from, you know, you mentioned the regulatory environment around data. Yeah. And that's very, very important to us. And it motivates a lot of the ways we approach things. But really, in our position, the primary motivation is that we have a duty, a stewardship duty to the data of all of our constituents, our faculty, our staff, our students, our alumni, to protect their personal information. And we take that very, very seriously. And of course, if we do our jobs well in that area, then we will comply with regulations. And so as we look at the kind of data we have to handle, I've mentioned financial aid a little while ago, that gets us into the realm of financial data for our students, sometimes for the students' families as well.
Sure, the parents' income and tax returns, maybe all sorts of very private information.
Yes, and we also handle things like payroll for our faculty and our staff and for others that are associated with the university that we have financial transactions with, companies. It's incumbent upon us to protect all of those transactions and all of the data associated with those transactions, because it's our duty, it's our ethical duty, but also in terms of regulations that we have to comply with. There are PCI industry standards that we have to comply with. There are specific privacy standards from the federal level and the state level that we have to comply with, that I'm sure many listeners are quite familiar with. And we have to be aware of all of those. We work intensely with our security office to make sure that as we architect systems, we have all of those requirements in consideration, and that we are fulfilling our requirements in that respect. So it's not just a legal requirement, but also an ethical requirement, because we want to protect our students in the same way that we would want to protect any member of our community from unwarranted intrusion into private details, like private, like identity theft or anything like that.
Right. It's interesting you use the word ethics, because it's certainly ethical towards the individuals contributing the data, but also you want an accurate database. You don't want a skewed database. You don't want garbage in, garbage out, right? So you're also developing databases so that they're usable. So I think you're telling us that in your role as an head of the enterprise data architecture team, you engage in privacy by design for a multiplicity of reasons, not just legal requirements. Would that be accurate?
That would absolutely be accurate. It certainly would.
Well, UNCG, like other universities, has a kind of centralized control of these data sources. And listening to you, I would suppose there are at least two major constituencies for this. One is students, is for financial aid and other purposes. But then the research side of this, your UNCG is a major research institution. And so are those sort of the two main constituencies, from getting to individual information about people to a database that is unusable?
Well, actually, those are two of the primary constituencies. But we also remember we have a reputation at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro for high quality teaching as well. So while we're an excellent research institution, we also have faculty who predominantly are teaching faculty, and we have data that the students would use in learning environments. That also, that's protected. That's FERPA protected data. So we have those sorts of obligations as well. And so I'd like to use an example.
Yeah, please do.
Of bringing together some data from multiple sources. So if we think about, we also have an undergraduate research component as well, but if we think about the FERPA demands for protecting student data, and we think about the learning systems that we have, within those systems we have attendance records, grade records, these kinds of things. These are protected by FERPA, but we do need to bring those together with other student data in order to assess a student's progress toward a degree, and to help our teaching faculty understand how to make sure that our students are successful. And so we have to protect the privacy from a FERPA standpoint, but also make the data available in that context in order to help our students succeed, both while they're at UNCG and after they have graduated. So that's the kind of thing that we have to think about as we bring together data from multiple systems. Now, another area where we have a lot of research going on campus is we have lots of partnerships in the community for medical research. We have a large and extremely well-respected nursing program. And in our Institutional Review Board, IRB, which every institution who's a research institution has, we monitor how research data are collected, how they're stored, and whether or not they involve human subjects, and they have to comply with specific regulations and with specific university policies as those data are brought together. And so we have all of those responsibilities in how we bring them together and render the data in some way that would make them private, but at the same time, allow them to be used in informed decision-making or in informed research findings.
And in this podcast, we don't want to get into all the technical details of what particular software cybersecurity you use, but it's really the architecture of data is a kind of combination of how you reassure individuals to put in proper data and then to assemble the data into a usable mass. That's the challenge your team faces?
That is the challenge that our team faces. We have to think about the architecture of the infrastructure, right, and how you protect the data flow over the network. But you also have to think about who has access to the data, at what level do they have access to the data, and how do you compartmentalize the data? And so we have to think of all those things. And you base that on an individual's role, on the type of data that you're working with, and on how you're delivering it, and whether it's going to be to a larger community or a very small contained group.
Let me ask you this. Have you found that members of the UNCG community are reluctant to share accurate personal information from privacy concerns? And how do you assure them that they can do that in a way that where their privacy concerns won't be mishandled?
Well, I haven't found that there's a specific reluctance to share privacy data, but I would say to all listeners that one should always be reluctant or very cognizant of who you're sharing the data with and what you're sharing. And we actually ask our constituents to be aware of the data that they're sharing, why they're sharing it, who they're sharing it with, including us. And I think that the way we best reassure them is that we make sure they understand that we view our legal obligations to protect the data very seriously. But moreover, we feel like it is our duty and our ethical obligation to provide as much protection for private personal data as we can, while we balance that with ensuring that they can successfully either do their jobs or whatever role that they have in the community, or that we can help them ensure their success as a student.
Well, let me ask you one last set of questions here. One last question, really. If, for the benefit of other universities, communities, there might be a city with 100,000 people. How can they, from your experience here, 25 years, how can communities design IT systems that encourage people to share accurate and private personal information that is then needed for research, student assessment, other assessment, and totally good purposes? What are the lessons, maybe take two or three, that you've learned from your experience that can help others?
Well, I think the first lesson is to listen to your constituents. What are their privacy concerns? Because you're going to have to begin addressing your designs from that perspective. So that's a question of what are your requirements, right? So you begin from that point, and then you assure them that you have the intention to design a system that will protect the privacy from their point of view. So you have to always keep in mind your end customer. Now, from there, you proceed to what are the technical designs. And I don't think we would have time here to really get into the technical aspects of it. But
I assume you use a variety of anonymization or pseudonymization.
Right, absolutely.
Proper cybersecurity, a variety of best
practices? Absolutely. There's the infrastructural design, but there's also the anonymization of the data. And sometimes, of course, and this is where you get into the really tricky bits, is some certain data, for instance, cannot be anonymized because of the purpose that it's used for.
And that's where students' progress, you can't anonymize that.
Right. Absolutely, you cannot. But if you're using that for a broad, if you're using data from that source for a broader institutional purpose, right, like planning your retention models, the folks who are doing that should not have access to the underlying identifying data. And so you have to plan systems that allow you to do both things, to have the data that is not anonymized in a very strict, highly secure kind of environment, but also anonymized data in a little bit more widely used kind of organizational need.
And that's the challenge of a data architect team.
That is exactly the challenge of a data architect. And so all of that comes to how do you design the underlying infrastructure, and then how do you design the access layer model? And the access layer model is a really critical piece.
Well, Lee, thank you for this fascinating introduction to how communities can both respect, not just because the law requires it, but to encourage people to protect their own data in a way that's still usable for essential purposes, and then to create databases in which society can use to advance the purposes of humankind. Any last thoughts for the listeners today?
No, just one. As you think about your own privacy, just be aware that you don't want to share more than you really need to share with anyone, and always keep that in mind.
Very good. And I'll end today's podcast, as I always do, with remember, protecting your personal privacy begins with you. Lee, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.